true under the, in the usury case, this court in the Finn versus Anderson held good faith is, in the so-called English versus Fisher type of rule, doesn't apply. It's a good faith obligation. In that case, was a release. And there were numerous and repeated efforts to try to get him to accept and agree, and he signed many things. This court held no consideration, and that even had he known that there is no release then if the transaction was not bona fide. Now, you talk about turning up on its head. Your holdings in Wynn versus Anderson are controlling of that part. Now,
let me go back to shut up.
Sure.
The record on the $121,000. Who owned that first lien that was paid off with that money that was put in?
Judge, let me say, when they came to the bank together to try to borrow the money on the new cattle venture they were going to get into, he and Brady, at that time, the debt, the Brady debt and the lien was in a Winter Garden PAC, one of these co-ops, and they told the bank they wanted to borrow this line. The bank structured it and then said, we want to have that in our, as an asset of our bank, and said, we won't give you anything until we have a prior lien on it and we own it, that debt.
So they paid off the Winter Garden PCA and then gave that lien to the bank.
Out
January 18th.
No. The records, and we've shown them to the court right now, show that on the 2nd of December, after they got the lien and the assignment, that's when the account was debited $121,000, leaving only $29,000 for the line of credit. And that's when Mr. Fancher became obligated on the entirety of it, and yet only having available for his use $29,000. He was obligated with a guy he was in the business deal with.
And that happened more than a month before they drew out any money.
That was the first draw. That the 121.
First draw of real money then was in January.
When they paid off Winter Garden. No, they paid Winter Garden off. I mean, not on the 2nd of December. But, and that was the first deduction. And let me make it clear, and to Your Honor, it's a rhetorical question. I don't think it makes any difference whether they're partners or not partners. When you are required to assume the debt of another that pre-existed that organization's obligation.
Well, certainly that's the issue, but doesn't Fancher deny that he was obliged to pay off the debt? I mean, he says the bank assured him that he wouldn't be, and
that's
denies
true.
That he was.
Then, notwithstanding the representation found by the jury and all, they then still proceeded to try to collect his debt against him, too. So I say the fraud finding reaches through partnership or anything else. They don't have an attack on that finding, the court pleads. And it's not just a spooky little finding. It's direct fraud in the inducement of him entering that transaction. But they're the ones that changed it. And them making their deal together to put partnership. They did it without authority and wrote it into the paper, possibly for the reasons that occur up here to our minds, to give them some security they would not have otherwise had.
I know you're anxious to sit down, but how do you answer the controllers, or do you answer the controllers hypothetical about paying off the credit card company? Because in gold, Bubba's debt, as I understand it, was owed to the bank, and the bank was trying to...
In gold, it was owed to the lumber company. But, I mean...
Right.
Yeah. And,
but to the same credit.
Yeah. And let me add that, Judge. I say that's nothing but an attack on gold itself. The structure
the credit,
of
and the
what
credit
the controller is saying. But, and Lord be it, I've tried too many times to say what the duty of this court is. But the duty is to deal with this case. And how this transaction
well,
was
hopefully
struck.
We won't have to look at every usury case in the state of Texas. What we write here will have some.
And this one is not like every one you've seen.
Do you say that a lending institution, that gold extends to his hypothetical? That is, if a lending institution comes in and they're worried about a wide separate credit card bill?
There's lots of cases on this question. If you assume the basic issue in this case, that at the time the loan, the note became effective and the loan was funded, it was owned by this bank and not Winter Garden or anybody else. That is gold. That is the gold. And the Texas Banking Commissioner, and I mean the Texas Bank Association and American, in their brief, they concede that, Mr. Chief Justice, that if this transaction was one in which the purchase, they got the purchase and he was required to sign on after it was the Victoria Bank, that's a gold transaction. The attempt of some of these amicus curiae is to deviate totally from that concept and come back to what they call the Goldring case by this court, that other transactions, which Justice Spears wrote a concurring opinion in, about we have pretty much relaxed a lot of the interest rules in Texas.
We abolished them, is what I said.
Well, I won't. There's
no such thing as usury anymore, I said.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I would say that I respectfully disagree that whatever there is, it's still Pochita. But it's you can't take this transaction and say it had any other purpose other than to require this gentleman to assume the debt of Brady. Now, I don't see anything that indicates that gold has been qualified when that's true. And in fact, you listed in your opinion a number of things. Done bad here. But I appreciate it.
Co-counsel wants to argue.
Well, I don't know how much time you're going to give him, but I know I've used up mine.
Any other questions? Thank you.
I did that to him in Corpus, too.
May it please the court, Mr. Fontaine will continue arguing with the respondent.
May it please the court, what I'd like to do is touch on a couple of questions that I have heard extended here as counsel at trial of this case. I think there's some facts that I could bring to the court that perhaps can answer some of these questions as well as the theories.
Judge, let me interrupt you just a moment.
Certainly, Judge.
Since your time is running out, regards to DTPA issues in this case.
All right.
Is it necessary to encroach further on Riverside and Solid Grain to uphold liability in this case?
Not at all, Your Honor. In fact, if you read the record carefully, what you find is the cattle that were sold to Mr. Richardson had been purchased by Mr. Francher earlier. And here, let me enlighten the exact sequence of transactions. Before Francher ever left the bank, David Barnhart, the bank officer, came to him and said, "We want Brady out of the bank, and you need to dissolve your partnership with him." He did, and he sold off the majority of cattle that they had purchased. The bank then came back to him and extended Francher individually a $200,000 line of credit. Francher bought cattle with that. His lines of credit were consistent with the bank. It was loans in order for him to go and buy cattle that the bank would have a lien on until he sold the cattle, at which time they would get paid back and he would take out the profit. The cattle that he sold to Richardson had been purchased back during the time period after the Francher-Brady partnership had been dissolved, and during the time period, the bank gave him this $200,000 line of credit. What they did was, is when he finally saw that he wasn't getting anywhere with this bank, he came in and said, "Guys, I'm clearing out. I'm out of here, and I want my CDs, and I want my deposits, and I want everything that I'm doing business with this court, with this bank." They did that. The only thing that they held on to was the $200,000 line of credit security agreement, and that's what they used to take $40,000 from him. So no, there's no extension of Riverside necessary here at all, because the loan was to buy goods, just as was brought up by, I believe, Justice Cook, and that was to sell them cattle. Justice Phillips, turning to your question about where the debt was owed at what particular point in time, I think the answer here is very short and very simple. Mr. Francher never became responsible to Victoria Bank and Trust for Brady's debt until Brady owed it to the Victoria Bank and Trust. What happened here is when they went in on November the 21st of 1983...
Do we have any jury findings in this area, or are we talking about the...
Yes, Your Honor. The first three jury findings, and this isn't it, the first three jury findings, and these are included in the addendum to the briefs, are Was Bill Fancher required to assume Marlon Brady's pre-existing debt under Transaction 1, under Transaction 2, under Transaction 3? Now, what is important here is just this. When the bank did this original, and Judge, we took the issue directly from Alamo Lumber versus Gold. And the evidence that supports that is really quite simple. And we set it out in our brief. When you look at the Vice President Church's testimony, and when you look at David Barnhart, the loan officer's testimony, both of them make very clear what happened. The bank had to have Brady's debt owed to them before anything was going to go into action. Fancher only became responsible for Brady's debt when the bank bought that debt from Winter Garden Production Credit Association. When you look at David Barnhart's testimony, nothing could be made clearer, because what I asked him was just that question and whether or not it was a requirement. And I said, and the way they, speaking of the bank, obtained that first lien was that they paid off the debt to Winter Garden Production Credit Association. That's correct. And you would agree with me that that certainly sounds like a requirement. Yes, it is. It's the way they set it up. And to answer the judge's question even more particularly, how can this be done where it's not a usury situation? It's very simple. They issue a single line of credit to Mr. Brady. They collateralize that with his land. And then they cross-collateralize that land to the $150,000 line of credit that was issued to Mr. Brady and Mr. Fancher. That way, Mr. Fancher never comes responsible for the man's pre-existing debt. The credit card instance that's brought up by the Comptroller of the Currency can also be equally dealt with. The fact of the matter is, they play a little shell game there of a man coming in to borrow for his business, but then them looking at his wife's personal accounts and wanting to use part of the proceeds of his business loan to pay off the wife's personal accounts. And the answer to that situation is very simple. Make the personal loan to him. It's a community property debt. You can require someone to pay off their own pre-existing debt. That's made fundamentally clear in Alamo Lumber versus Gold. The evil here is requiring Fancher to pay off another man's pre-existing debt, because that's unquestionably money that he has to pay in order to get the loan. And that's exactly what happened here. And Gold says that's considered to be interest, and here that's $121,000 worth of interest for $29,000 worth of proceeds on the first loan.
Mr. Fancher claims that the bank assured him that he would not be liable for Mr. Brady's debt, and if he hadn't been, and then that would accomplish the same thing that you're saying here.
Well, it would, Your Honor, except I believe the Danziger case says once you charge it, the responsibility is on you, the lending institution. You're the experts in this area. Whether or not you collect it, you can't come in here and say, well, wait, we didn't collect this, and therefore it's not usury. I think the law has been clear, and I think the statute's also clear. If you contract for or you charge usury, it's the same sin and the same evil. I think the best solution, Justice Hecht, is the one that I put forward, and that is if they really wanted to do it legitimately and do it right, they give Brady his own line of credit and secure it with his land and then cross-collateralize the land over to the operating line of credit for the cattle company. One other thing that you brought up, Justice Hecht, that I want to address. You said brought up the issue of partnership, and this is an issue that was discussed at length throughout the course of this trial. This note was unquestionably a note, all three of them, made to co-makers, each being individually responsible. The bank's computer records said that. The note itself, until it got altered by the bank after the time that it was signed by the borrowers, said that. And in fact, the jury answered in question number 14 that it was a co-maker's debt and not a partnership debt. So they unquestionably were taking two individuals so far as the debt was concerned. And I asked the bank officers, I said, is it possible, and did you in fact have a partnership but make the loan to the two separate partners as individuals, as co-makers? If you read Vice President Royce Church's testimony, he says that's exactly right. The second issue that I would like to touch on just briefly was one that was raised by Mr. Hall when he talked about the Zavala County deal, where Mr. Brady was filing a suit to prevent foreclosure on his land. The bank takes Mr. Fancher down there with him to try and work things out. And I think it's interesting that Mr. Hall and the bank takes the position that they signed an agreement down there, and if I quote from his oral argument, that settled the dispute between everybody. Nothing could be further from the situation that occurred down there, because the bank turned around after that and sued Fancher for Brady's pre-existing debt. We don't have to worry here as to whether or not they charged that interest. That's what they sued Mr. Fancher for. And that's why it's our belief that no extension of Alamo Lumber, no extension of Laid Right is necessary here. Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, Mr. Jeff Hall, representing the Bible petition.
May it please the court. Let me just pick up where we just finished. Yes, Victoria Bank and Trust sued Mr. Fancher, but it sued him on the note that was signed in connection with the release agreement. That was the note he was sued on, and not on the original debt. You recall we pointed out that in connection with the release agreement, there was an extension of time to pay. Mr. Fancher didn't pay that either, and that was the thing that he was sued upon. I think we need to spend some time in talking about Alamo Lumber. I ran out of time earlier, but based upon what we've just heard, it deserves some attention. First of all, the language that's put on the board here and pointed out to the court is very interesting language. It's been suggested we've done a shell game. All I want to say is I hope the court will please take the time to look at the record and look at some of the briefing that we've done, especially in the response brief, and see exactly who's saying what about the record and check it against the record. I invite that kind of inspection. The truth of the matter is that we're dancing back and forth here between legal fiction as the note set it up and reality as the deal was actually done. And we're mixing those two, and the legal fiction isn't even being set forth properly. It's pointed out here, well, Mr. Fancher wasn't liable on that debt until such time as the money was paid to Winter Garden PCA. They want the legal fiction, but the thing they don't do is turn over to page 2 of their legal fiction where it says that the debt is owed by Brady and Fancher Cattle Company. So it wasn't a pre-existing debt even to Victoria Bank and Trust under the legal fiction if they want to go with that. Now let's straighten out the dates on when advances were made under the note. October 21, 1983, the loan documents were executed. December 12, not 2nd of December, but December 12, 1983, the first advance was made. It was $121,000 plus change, not paid to Winter Garden PCA, but put in escrow so that the lien could eventually be paid off. There was a delay in getting that paid off. The record doesn't say what the reason was, but maybe it had something to do with Winter Garden PCA, but the money was sitting there waiting for it. In the meantime,
was interest being charged to as of the date it was put in escrow?
I believe it was, Your Honor.
That was counted as a drawdown against the line of credit.
The interest that was being charged. In the meantime, they wanted to proceed with their cattle business. And the documents do not say, as the Court of Appeals misstates in its opinion, that the note was not effective until they had a first lien. It said that they were not obligated to fund. And the truth of the matter is that even though not obligated, Victoria Bank and Trust did fund. And on January the 16th, it funded some of the line of credit for use in their business of buying cattle. And then on January 18th, 1983, the money was eventually paid over to Winter Garden PCA, and at that point in time, the Winter Garden PCA lien was assigned to Victoria Bank and Trust. Now, it suggested that our only attack upon Alamo Lumber is that it's not paid to the same lender. Yes, that is an attack. And I think the record is clear that this is paid to a third party and not to the same lender, as was the case in Alamo Gold. As pointed out, everything was owed to Alamo Lumber Company. And that raises some other interesting matters that also distinguish this case from Alamo Gold or Alamo Lumber. Number one, there wasn't any compensation to Victoria Bank and Trust for putting out that $121,000.
They got a first lien.
They did get a first lien on that, Your Honor, but that's collateral. That's not interest. Plus the fact they paid independent consideration. They put out $121,000, and they hoped that it would get paid back, but that is independent consideration. They weren't getting somebody else's debt paid that they had no right to get paid, like Bubba Gold's debt to Alamo Lumber when Mama got her extension of credit. It just doesn't qualify. Now, it's got to be compensation of some kind to the bank for it to be interest, because interest, by definition, is that which is paid for
for the forbearance, the use, or the detention of money. That's what the statute calls it. And if there is no compensation to Victoria Bank and Trust, there is no interest, and it's not interest under the precedence of this court. If there is independent consideration, and there was in the payment of the $121,000. And in addition to that, Mr. Fancher certainly got some benefit himself, because he got the use of that land as collateral under that first lien for his part of the loan from Victoria Bank and Trust.
Mr. Hall, you're about to run out of time. Something that, not to hurt you, attack any of the jury findings, but all went against you. What can you summarize or capsulize, you know, what is your attack in question 4 and 12 that the jury found decidedly against you? How do you overcome them?
Your Honor, issue number 4 does not go to the release. Fraud was not pled as a defense to the release in this case. It was pled as a defense to the note. And we attacked it in the Court of Appeals, and when we came before this court, we had to make some tough choices. And that choice involved a matter relating to about $250,000, and we just said, fine, we're going to appeal some more important things in this case. And we did not attack issue 4. I take issue with it, but it's correct, we did not attack it. But they didn't plead it in relationship to the note. They didn't submit it to the jury in relationship to the note. And there is no jury finding of fraud in relationship to the release, only in relationship to the note. And if you look at the judgment, the only use that's made in the judgment of issue number 4 is saying that because of the finding in issue number 4, Victoria Bank and Trust cannot collect on its note. Now, in connection with Alamo Lumber, we also attack it on the basis that the Court of Appeals stood the standard of review on its head, because Judge Stevenson set aside the jury's finding on usury, and he found in his judgment that the debt was not owed to Victoria Bank and Trust. And if you look at the calendar of events as we have defined them, I think that's established. There is certainly some evidence to support it. And if there is some evidence to support it, then Judge Stevenson's finding.
Judge Stevenson's finding was as a matter of law. You don't test that by the some evidence rule.
No, Your Honor, it was an omitted issue. And that gets back to the issue. They say the issue we presented was taken from Alamo Lumber. It was not. They put the holding sentence from Alamo Lumber by the issue in this case. The issue in Alamo Lumber was, do you find from a preponderance of the evidence that Bubba Gold, I believe it was, or Mrs. Gold, was required to assume the debt which Bubba owed to Alamo Lumber? There was no finding in this case as to whom the debt was owed. Judge Stevenson made a finding as to whom the debt was owed, and I submit that since it was omitted to the jury, that if there's any evidence to support it, then it should have been affirmed by the Court of Appeals, and because it wasn't, this court should reverse the Court of Appeals in connection with that finding, and that relates to Alamo Gold.
Did Judge Stevenson make a written finding on that?
It's in the judgment, Your Honor. It is in the judgment, Your Honor. These men were partners. Exhibit 15 in the record is a partnership agreement. Okay, maybe they were co-mingled notes. Let's take that as a given. But they were still both jointly and severally liable, and this record shows that on the books of the partnership, there was a debt carried from Mr. Brady to Mr. Fancher. Guess what the amount was? $121,000 plus change. The exact amount that was in connection with the Winter Garden PCA debt. Justice Hightower, so far as the record is concerned, Mr. Brady was not present when these statements were allegedly made to Mr. Fancher. He was not around. Mr. Fancher did not get the collateral agreement, and while it is suggested in some of the briefing that as far as the collateral agreement is concerned, that had the cross-collateralization provisions in it, that it was stale. Frankly, if that's a term of law, I've never come across it. We reviewed every jurisdiction and every case that we could find as far as computers were concerned, and we found no other reference to a stale security agreement. He got everything else, but you don't release valid security agreements as long as somebody owes the bank money. And he still, in the mind of Victoria Bank and Trust, owed them money. Accordingly, they did not release it and were entitled in good faith to enforce it. which I think does away with the deceptive trade practices claim and the tortious interference, since under that it would be privileged.
At the time these representations were made to Fancher, was that after they had already determined to get Brady out of the bank and went to Fancher and said, now we want to get rid of him and you should break off your partnership with him?
Your Honor, if I understand the representations they're talking about that relate to the fraud that in the verdict and the judgment vitiated the note, those, as I understand it, were representations made way back in connection with the institution of the line of credit and not at that point in time. Now, he may said that they were repeated during that period of time, but at least I think they started back at the beginning, according to Mr. Fancher.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. That concludes the argument in the first clause. The court will take a brief recess.
Please rise.